Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 18 of the Homesteading UK podcast. I'm Al, I'm here with my friend Mike. How you doing, mate? You alright?
Alright.
We start every podcast
every time.
Every time.
Move.
Every time. Oh, dear. So it's been what, like, ages? 6 weeks nearly? Yeah. 5 weeks? Oh, that's the longest we've done between podcasts in a long time since the summer.
Wasn't the intention, but... No. I've had the vid, bro.
Oh, man.
I've had the vids. I've not been very well, but I'm all right now.
You're on the mend, yeah?
Yeah, very much. Good. So. And good. It's nice to be back and getting out. And I didn't stop, really, doing stuff. I slowed down. I had a couple of days off work, but it's been a really busy, nice time. Different time, in what I'm doing. But it's been nice to be back on my health, getting better, I have to say.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And you've been busy, obviously, working and doing all the things that I imagine many of the people listening are a bit envious of the fact you get to do it for a living.
Yeah, they probably are, mate. Yeah. Things have really progressed and, you know, we're moving into the second phase at the self-sufficient farm that we're setting up now where it's about developing maybe some retail and some outlet and upscaling, growing and tunnels and all that sort of stuff. But really lucky to be part of it, and certainly I'm not doing it on my own. You know, there's some really good people there who are sort of making it happen and pulling the strings and giving me the opportunity to do things. So there's been a lot like that occurring, and then there's been a lot of learning going on as well, which is nice for me. But I know we'll talk about some of those things going on, but there's a tendency, isn't there, for at this time of the year, people can. I certainly feel like I want to get things all lined up. We've been discussing this. Get things all straight, because I know that, you know, within probably 10 days when I actually really start sowing, I'm not going to have time to do anything else. I'm going to be absolutely flat out on, you know, just sowing, looking after seedlings, making sure that things have germinated, that I haven't got any pest damage or, you know, and stuff like that. So it's going to become all-encompassing. And so before that beautiful mayhem, I just want to make sure that all of the other little things are tidied up and sorted out or organised or accounted for. And that can be from ordering, make sure my barrels and my homebrew is ticking over, because I probably won't have time. And then if I don't do it now, I probably won't.
Yeah.
Making sure that, you know, all of the equipment and the tools that I need are all sorted out and done. And if there's any little bits of ordering I've got to do, that's sort of done. And, you know, if there's little applications or licenses or grants I'm looking at the moment, I've got them done, because I know I'm not going to have time pretty soon. So I think it's not quite the exciting sewing bit, but it's very nearly there.
Well, it's definitely time to be getting your ducks in a row, isn't it? That's what we were talking about earlier, wasn't it? Like,
I've literally been getting some ducks as well.
Have you?
Yeah, quite a lot of ducks in a row. So the guy on the local shoot's been dropping me in ducks.
Oh, wow.
And I've been breasting them out and eating them. Nice. Lovely jubbly. So in more ways than one, I've been getting ducks in a row.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I've been doing very much the same. We always talk about the fact you're just doing it on a bigger scale. It's very, very similar here.
Absolutely.
Just getting organised and sorted out.
And I'm also doing it at home.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, thinking about, you know, my little poly powerhouse blew away in the winter, and I was like, maybe I don't need one at home because I'm obviously growing so much at work now, but I still want one at home, and they're very reasonably priced at the moment. If you're in the UK, the Wilcos are selling theirs at the moment, and they're £30 or £35 for a 6x4 walk-in greenhouse, and I don't think that's bad, and that's just over half price, and they'll be back to £60 within a couple of days or a week or something. So, you know, maybe if you're thinking of getting one, the ones that have got the reinforced mesh inside rather than clear poly, they're much more secure.
You got about 3 years out of that one of those, didn't you, the first one you had?
If you take it down, you'll get longer than that.
Yeah.
If you leave it up all year, you'll get about 3 years out of it before the UV starts to break it down.
Yeah.
But I mean, you make the money back probably in a year, you know, so I'm going to get one, I think. Definitely get one. So, but yeah, it's nice to have making some plans, but also know that growing at home isn't the be all and end all for me anymore because of the opportunity to bring so much produce home. And like I say, I'm doing it all day, every day. And still have the conversation about why do we still have to have chickens at home? I've got 40 chickens at work. But that's just how I am. Yeah. And I like having the two is one,
mate.
That's it. Well, 40 is 39, actually.
Yeah.
You want to say it.
40 is 6. No. How many you got home?
I don't know how many we got home now. I can't even remember. 3, 4, 5. One of my pekings laid an egg last week.
40
mate.
Is 5. Mine has started laying again.
Oh, my chickens are laying nearly. I've got two. I get 2 eggs a day at the moment.
Yeah.
But 2 of my hens are very old pekings.
Yeah.
And every we probably get 5 or 6 pekin eggs a year. So
right,
that,
okay.
That's
well,
always
so
a special occasion.
Momentous occasion, yeah, yeah.
One of them is laid. But the other three are great. 3 laying hybrids, and we normally get 3 eggs a day. But at the moment, we're getting 2.
Yeah.
But 14 eggs a week is quite all right enough, at the moment. Yeah. Well, not quite enough. I'd probably eat. Okay. Between us, we eat a lot more eggs than that.
Right.
But we've gone over to eating eggs as one of our proteins twice a week, probably. Yeah. So there's 4 of us. And if you have a 3-egg omelette each, that's 12 eggs like that.
Yeah, done.
And then obviously I'm trying to keep up with my home bakes and things like that. So, you know, we're still practicing mighty thrift in our house.
Right.
But it's beautiful thrift, you know. We're enjoying it. I'm enjoying it anyway. Mm. So, yeah, I think that there's an opportunity for me to be a bit more relaxed in my actual home environment. But I still want to grow some salads and things that I just want to go and pick every day. And we were discussing it. And even though there's not a necessity to do it as much, it's still important for me that my children can see it. And then we've got it there. And I know it's probably would divide opinion, but I find looking at a really nice vegetable garden just as pleasurable as looking at loads of flowers.
Yeah.
If I'm honest with you, if I'm sitting down and I can see that, I'm quite a happy man. So.
Yeah. I weeded one of the ornamental borders in the back garden the other day. I can see when I'm doing the washing up.
Mm.
And it's such a pleasure just to stand and look at that when it's looking nice like that. But a veg bed would do the same if that's what you like, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, it is very much this time of... It's more than just planning. It's getting things done so you can get on. You know, it's a bit like sweeping your workshop up before you make something.
There's a bit of time. I'm feeling a bit of time pressure. I've got to be honest, because I'm feeling a bit like I know. You know, in years gone by, I'd be sowing by now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of laying off that because I want to get some other things done first.
Yeah.
I want to get other bits organised and sorted, so I can forget about that.
Bit of infrastructure set up.
Yeah, it is very much set up for me, and trying to get that. You know, the building part of things done so that I can then organise the things I want them organised before I start that. Because once I've started sowing seeds, I've then got time pressure to look after those seedlings.
Absolutely.
And that is, you know, it might be tomatoes, it might be onions, it might be whatever. Once they're in the soil and they started growing, then I've got to be able to, this Saturday, I've got to go and plant them out because that's what they need to happen. Which means I can't do that bit of decorating in the house or that bit of building that you're doing or whatever else it is. So it's a time for doing that. You know, and for me as well, it's a time for reorganising my plans because the plans I had aren't going to be suitable for this year, as it turns out. We'll come on to that in a bit. So anyway, what have you been doing?
Well, I have been doing a lot of coppicing since January.
Okay.
and that has also involved learning about Forestry Commission regulations in our country and mapping and applying for felling licences and regeneration, restocking, all of these different things. And I've really enjoyed that. And I have to say, you know, the Forestry Commission's websites and advice that's available online and their online support packages are really good, I have to say. I've also had some site visits to some of the woods that we manage from woodland officers who have been absolutely brilliant. This is in the southeast. And I've really been on a real steep learning curve, especially with the timber. And that's on the back of getting the chainsaw licenses and things like that. But then that in turn has meant that we've got some really nice product of sweet chestnut, coppice chestnut, and a good bit of that will go to firewood. Some of it's quite overstood, but being able to start making things. And for me, I think people know that that's one of the things I'm really interested in. So, you know, making my own shave horse for the shop, and then that led on to being able to start thinking about making products for the farm using the tools that I've made myself. And that's a lovely circle to be in. You know, if you need a new fence, if you need, you know, post and rail stuff, being able to do that yourself because you've got the product and the capacity and then the tools work it. It's lovely. Really, really nice.
I really enjoyed seeing your picture of the gate hurdle that you've made. It was about 2 years too late. That sure, you promised been, me it 2 years
that
ago.
That has been a proper dream of mine for a long time. And it's funny, isn't it, how you have things in your life that you want to have a go at.
Yeah.
And I've known that there's loads of different types of green woodwork product to make, but I know that I want to make gate hurdles. I don't want to make wattle hurdles. I don't want to make anything else. That is what I want to specialise in. And perhaps that's a bit weird because most green woodworkers do lots of different things. And that's how they make their money and stuff like that. But for me, I've just got a thing about them. Mm. I like the form. I like all of the process of doing it, from growing it and coppicing it and using the fro to rive it and then bringing it back and working it through the shave horse to make products. But then I suppose it's because I can see a way to then take that to its extension, which is either using it myself or making a product to sell. Mm. And I would imagine that 99% of it will not be for what it was originally intended.
Yeah.
You know, they were for herdling sheep and they've been movable for strip grazing or what have you. And I think that there could be a market for that for smallholders and people who are doing temporary setups where they've got, oh, we've got a few lambs, we need to put them somewhere.
Mm.
But are they going to go back to overtaking galvanised metal hurdles? No. Probably not, unless you're interested in the look, which some smallholders are. Most smallholders aren't because they haven't got time for that business.
No.
They are sustainable, though. They are locally produced from sustainable woodland. They are biodegradable, fully, you know. And some of those things are becoming more important to some people. But I think that they're also beautiful objects in their own right. And I know that for me, it's also about trying to find contemporary ways of using a historical item. So looking at having, you know, small, bespoke, low gate hurdles around your flowers to keep them off the grass, you know, as support mechanisms, things for keeping pets and little kids off your certain areas of the garden. I can see them working more like that these days. And I don't really like post and rail, the look of it, because it demarks a boundary, but it doesn't stop anything.
No.
You end up either having to nail stock fencing on it to stop going through it, or it's just there to demark a boundary. It doesn't actually, you can see through it, so it doesn't make it any more private, what have you. And I actually prefer the look of gate hurdles around as a boundary. I'd have a gate hurdle front fence, personally.
Okay.
You know, like a picket fence. Yeah. I think they're really nice.
Yeah.
You know, and the chestnut that I'm coppicing, they probably last 10 years. You know, and fence panels ain't cheap, are they?
No, probably don't last 10 years always either, do they?
And traditionally, you know, you can make gate hurdles of different sizes and things like that. The ones that I made there was very much just sort of like a test piece just to start off. And it's not quite right. There's a few errors. And I think that's probably about 4x4, maybe 4x5, something like that. But I'll experiment making some different ones now and try and, you know, I've got an area at home that I know I'm going to make some for around my strawberry bed to stop my dog going on there. And then we've got some areas on the farm where we need some bespoke little things, but it's not a million miles from a gate hurdle to a gate. And I've already got a gate at my house made out of split chestnut, and I love it. And it's beautiful, my back gate going out into the field in the back. And I just think that there will be more opportunities, you know, from a more decorative kind of landscaping feature. And, you know, once the farm shop gets up and running, there'll be a few gate hurdles out the front. There'll be a few shave horses out the front because people might want to buy one of those. But there'll be the opportunity for people to say, well, I've got an area that, you know, I need a four foot high, 10 foot long bit of screening for something, or, you know, either side of my path or what have you. So it might be something that we might take orders on every now and then and do some bespoke work, or we make a load up and then just have them. But I don't think we'll do too much in advance. So. But I've really enjoyed that skill. And I know we've spoke about it before, but so much so is that in the UK, there is an endangered list of heritage crafts and gate hurdling's on it.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to be doing one of those crafts.
So you didn't fancy doing the glass eyes, no?
Not the glass eye. No. Not the, what was it, leather, hand stitching of cricket balls is on there. reverse gold leaf sign writing. There's some amazing things on it. But the gate hurdling I've always wanted to do, as you know. And so I've even applied for a grant through them to see if I can get some money to help towards some training. Or there's one particular tool that is very hard to come by, which is called a twibill. I've never ever seen one in the flesh.
Wow.
It's a mortising knife. It's a weird T-shaped. It's got a sharp end on one side and like a bent mortising chisel on the other end.
Okay.
And it's specifically for, if you drill two holes and there's a bit of waste wood in between, you cut down the sides and chisel it out so you get left with an oval shaped mortise, which your tenons go through
from
your gate.
Right.
And it's designed for that job.
Yeah.
And I can buy a new one for about £90.
Right.
But I've been looking for one for probably 5 years. Never ever seen one.
Right.
Never seen one. So if anyone's got a mortise engine,
one day we're going to get, you're going to do that and someone's going to come back to you.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's a you can get by without it. You just drill two holes and they use a regular chisel and a regular mortising chisel to take out the waste. But there's something about learning to look after those tools. And I expect if I go to Bentley Wood Fair, I'll get one.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so that would be my plan this year because, I mean, there's some beautiful tool sellers there. I love going
to that Wood Fair.
It's amazing.
Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you go there this year, you'll see it with different eyes out.
Because well, I did the last
cutting
year.
Your own, cutting
last
your own
year
timber.
I did, I went, yeah. It was amazing. You told me it would make a difference. It really has. It really has.
You go there, you look at these big chunks, you go, whoa, some of that. But funnily enough, you know, that's very much a thing of mine that I've always wanted to do, but it fits very much in with the lifestyle, doesn't it?
Mm.
And what really sort of drove that home is that part of the thing I was thinking about doing is looking to find a local gate hurdler and going up and using some money to pay to go and do a couple of days release.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's all. I don't really need any tools, really.
No.
But what you can't buy is someone who does it showing you how to do it.
Yeah, a couple of days, a very brief apprenticeship.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and I think this week I've sent off 10 emails to recognised, you know, gate hurdlers in Sussex, and none of them have replied.
Yeah.
Which shows you that not many people I don't even know if any of these people are still doing it.
They're probably too busy. They haven't even got computers. That's what it is. It
could be, mate. But it's not something that's easy to come by.
No.
And that's the whole reason it's on a critically endangered heritage craft. But for me, I don't think, you know, some of the things that are on that list, I don't think will ever come back because technology's advanced and the need for what they're making is advanced.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I think that there is an opportunity for gate hurdles to still be a useful item, you know, in this day and age.
Yeah,
it might have to change its use.
Role, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But as a thing, I think they're incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. And you know, I'd love it if in a few years you could come by the farm and, you know, where we've got our, you know, young animals, our goats or what have you, you know, splitting them up and what have you. We're in charge of making our own product to do that. I think that would be wonderful. And it's probably just me. I think they look way nicer than Galvey steel.
Yeah.
They look lovely. Absolutely amazing. I've just had a thing for them. Good job I didn't have a thing for glass eyes. Marbles. Anyway, I've talked about that quite a lot. See, this is the trouble when you get me on to about coppicing, mate. That is it. Done.
So, in a nutshell, Mike's been doing wood stuff.
Yeah, it. Well, no, it's not all of it. So, I think, I don't know if we talked about it, but I started my carving club.
I don't remember, but yeah, you started a carving club.
And we've had just meeting once a month. And a few people came round, sit round the wood burner, make some spoons and all of that. And that was very much on my agenda to try and do, learn a few skills, try new things and to have some have some parts of this kind of lifestyle, which are also about sociability and sharing and making, making things, you know. And it was a really nice evening and the next one's planned for a couple of weeks and I'm really looking forward to it. And that's in my shop for a few months, but the aim would be then that actually by May that might be out in the coppice around the fire outside rather than out around a wood stove. The wood stove was key to that beginning because there's no way you'd have sat in my shop at 10 o'clock, it'd have been freezing. But I really had a beautiful time there. We had a bit of classic FM on, tea and biscuits,
very
sitting around. It was really lovely. Well, it runs from 7 till 10 now, and that's exactly when Smooth Classics at 7's on for three hours. And it was just on in the background. It was a thing of beauty, mate.
Yeah.
I would encourage everyone to have a bit of classic FM in their life, I have to say. It's very nice. But none of us are experts there. Well, I can say that. Some of the other people are probably far more expert than I am, but that's not what it's about. It's about just sharing space, sitting down, chatting and making something. And there's a definite amount of mindfulness that comes with carving spoons and spatulas and making stuff and learning from each other. So that's been really lovely. So that's the other thing that I've been doing. And I might put a few pictures of some things that we've been doing online and people can have a look and stuff like that. So I would be encouraging people to maybe try and do some of these clubs that are out there, I suppose.
Right, we'll set one up if there isn't one. That's the other thing, isn't it? Set some up.
You don't have to be an expert to set up a club. That's what I like. That's what I like.
Yeah.
That's what I like because it's not a talk
thing. It's not a class.
No,
it's not a lesson. No. It's just a chance to come and do that thing.
Yeah.
And you might all be completely useless.
Rubbish,
But you'll get better by doing it, won't you? And working together doing it. That's for sure.
Doing it, mate. And
Well, I've been working with wood a lot as well.
I know you have, mate. So I've been looking at the fruits of your labour.
Yeah, so we're at my house this time, which is interesting. You know, unusual. We've done it once before here, I think. But it's
like
nice.
A wood cabin here now, it's mate. Nice.
It? Well, we're getting there. I'm slowly bedecking the whole place in timber. But no, so I've cut and split the last of that oak that I brought home from work.
Yeah, your woodshed's looking a bit nicer than mine at the moment.
And I had to buy a bit more to fill it up, but I've now got, I reckon, well, more than enough for what's left for this year.
Mm.
And then the start of next year's already stacked and stored, which is a really nice feeling.
Yeah. And there's been someone chatting about firewood, isn't there? Sean, is it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Mate, she had like the cleanest palettes I've ever seen on that photo. Did you see how nice they were?
Yeah.
They were too nice.
Scandinavian, mate.
I know. I'd be taking the wood off them and making like a bit of furniture or something. It was so nice. I was looking at them and I was looking at my own stuff and my eyes thought, wow, pallets in Scandinavia are nicer than my furniture.
I wonder if IKEA do pallets.
Anyway,
she
was looking at siting the wood pile, wasn't she, and stuff like that, which is something that I know you've been doing.
Well, I've, to be honest, I just did mine where it made most sense for it to be for me in terms of the space. So it's just down the side of the house in an alleyway. And just to one side of that, I built a little, well, quite a big store.
It's looking really good, mate.
It's got 3 metres long and about 1.5 metres high, something like that. 1.8 metres high, something like that.
Really good.
So I've got good for us, for what we use timber-wise for the log burner here. I reckon that's, when that's full, it'd be about enough for a year, for a winter.
Which is superb, isn't it? And so, that's what you need to get into, is working out what you need and then cutting your cloth accordingly.
Yeah.
And then you'll get into a place where you're like, I should always have 2 years in.
Well, I already kind of started doing that. I've got a contingency plan in mind, so it's not, it's not in the realms of possibility it can be done. And then I've rehomed the chicken run, which will eventually become the quail house.
Nice.
In time, once we go, the guinea pig run rather. Yeah. When we've got no more guinea pigs, that'll become the quail spot.
Yeah, or bunnies.
Or bunnies.
Something edible anyway.
But probably quail. And then, alongside that, a little barn for storing the things that those creatures need. So,
and it kind of comes back to what we were saying about having all these jobs done and out of the way and sorted, and certainly becoming more efficient and effective and recognising issues. You know, if timber's lovely to have on site, but then if it's always damp, it's not a pleasure, is it, going out and getting it and bringing it in? And so you're finding solutions to all these problems. And I know that's what a lot of people have been doing.
Mm.
Certainly people who are chatting online and trying to work out the best thing. I know certainly for me, one of the best things I've learned about timber drying logs is that think about it like washing. And I think we've spoke about it before.
Mm.
Don't think about it like it needs to be in the baking sun. It needs to have the airflow. It's the airflow that really dries it out. And you know, if you put your kind of washing out on a windy day, it's better than putting it out on a sunny day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that definitely works for logs, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
But it's been great to see how other people are doing that.
Yeah, and I've got a little cover over the top of mine, which is waterproof.
Yep.
So it won't get wet on it. It's not got as much airflow through it because it's got sides on it, but it comes around the front pretty well.
It was pretty blowy down that alleyway, mate. I reckon it'll be fine.
Yeah, so
I reckon it'll be fine.
With a bit of luck, that'll do the job. But failing that, I've got time, haven't I? Just use... Rely on the time. It's going to be great. It takes a bit of time, doesn't it?
I think the sun will beat down on the top of that. You know, that will certainly help bring it out as well. Yeah. So my timber is down and ringed, so it's cross cut, but it's not all split yet.
Okay.
But it will be getting... I was supposed to do it last weekend, but me and a friend went up there, and I have to say, I was still so tired after having COVID. I was pretty useless. I cut the poles from a gate hurdle, and then I just made a massive bacon and egg sandwich and
done that.
We felled his timber for him, but he worked a lot harder than I just was absolutely floored by it. But so I've probably got a couple of days of splitting and stacking. But obviously, I'm not bringing all my timber home like you do. I stack it in the woods. So I've probably got about two years down, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite, but I've still, you know, we've still got March. We can still fail in March.
Well, for me, I've been able to make do with what space I've got. You know, and I've got space at home, and I'm fortunate to have that space at home.
Yeah, you are.
Otherwise, I did have to buy a bit in this year to get us through this last bit of winter. I'm only just now starting to use the timber that I bought in for this year. I'm really pleased with that. It's a really good effort. And hopefully then next year with what's already there, the oak that I've cut and split, I'll be all right.
Yeah, the trouble is that you'll find more. Well, you'll be like, oh, I could take that. And then it's like, right, now where am I going to put it?
Well, I'll find somewhere. There are other little places where I could like screw it away around the house, absolutely. Around the garden.
What I'd be doing,
no one would notice.
Definitely what I'd be doing.
There's a couple of spots I've got in mind already. I'm thinking, actually, I could just put just a little stack in there. You know.
Yeah, you don't need loads, do you?
No.
It definitely makes a difference having it at home. I know that as much as I like having it at the woods all stacked and nice and drying, when I get it home and stack it at home, it's a really nice feeling having known it's there.
Yeah.
And that you've got an opportunity to stay warm in a power cut or what have you. And
in the woods, is it just open to the elements?
Yeah, I dry mine open. So I make what's called a closed square stacks. And then they're about a metre by a metre by a metre. So about a metre cubed. They're a bit higher than a metre. Mm. And I'm not adverse to putting a top on, but nothing down the sides.
Yeah.
So the tarps are all right, but they do pull the water and they blow around. Really, I'd like some old corrugated sheets and stuff like that. I have seen chaps, when they're working with silver birch, take the bark off and make sheets out of that, and that's lovely.
Lay that over top.
But you can also arrange your logs, you know, if you're really good at it, so that the water, you know, they've got like a pitch roof on and they run off each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's skill. I ain't got that kind of level of skill. So what I tend to do is I leave the logs out until next autumn. So they'll have 6 months getting wet and drying, getting wet and drying, getting wet and drying. But they've got a lot of sun on them, and the wind blow, because they're open, is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I'll bring them home. My one of my problems is that I have to store my logs on the north face of my house.
Right.
And so they're always damp.
Yeah.
They're not always damp when I bring them in, but if it gets wet, they're not going to dry out.
Yeah.
You know, there's some good wind across the front, but the trouble is so I'm going to take a leaf out of your book and redesign my log storage undercover. So I've got a bit of both. I cover mine with tarps when I bring them home.
Right.
But just the top. Yeah. I don't have any tarp coming down the sides.
Yep.
And I'm probably a little bit fastidious about my stacking.
You're better, much better at stacking.
I love a good timber stack.
Whereas I just stack it so it's not going to fall down. No, that's good enough for me. But one of the things really noticeable is that the timber that you got me, that I've cut from the farm, that I've brought home and stored, obviously in my store here, is much drier than the stuff that I've bought, even though the moisture content's down. So the moisture content's down below 20% on the stuff I've bought. So it's perfectly fine to burn, but it just feels damp on the outside. And I think it's probably just the way it's been stored. It's probably humidity,
Imagine.
It
could be, yeah.
It's probably been stored in the builder's bag it was delivered in, I would imagine. That's what I would
builder's bags are not ideal, are they?
No.
The stuff that you got from me had been open and it's probably 2 years old rather than 1 year old.
Yeah.
And it was a lot smaller diameter, some of it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was good quality stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe it'd been on the turn a bit, though. Some of it maybe is almost starting to degenerate a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if it's open to the elements, it can start to rot, can't it?
But
I don't think it's damp like that, is it?
No, it's not. It just feels damp on the outside. It's not. And once it gets burned, it burns lovely. It's not a problem. But we're finding it's taking a bit more to get it going than the stuff I've been using before at the moment. But it won't be like that for long, because where it's stored now, it'll dry out relatively quickly, I would think.
Yeah, and I think you do the same as us, in that we bring our firewood inside.
Try and bring it in a few days ahead of when I'm going to need to use it, and sit it right by the fire.
I can get a week's worth around my fire, but I'm probably... Yeah, it's not the most ideal thing, is it? Looks great, though, doesn't it, when you bring it on a Saturday, stacked all the way round.
My wife said to me the other day, oh, well, wouldn't it be nice to have a little... I saw this thing, what was it, where were we, somewhere, like in a Italian restaurant maybe, something like that. And they had the wood burning pizza oven.
Yeah, lovely.
And they had all the logs stacked up by the side in a nice cabinet, you know.
Lovely,
like,
mate.
Not a cabinet, but you know what I mean, like a bookshelf kind of setup.
Yeah, nice.
All the logs all nicely stacked in there.
Yeah.
So, oh, that looks nice. We should have one of them in our lounge. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely up for that. all silver like birch, and all the ends all cut flush and tapped in, so they're all exactly the same little.
Yeah, yeah, that's the sort of thing she's got in mind. But when I've done it, it won't look anything like that because I'm a bit more slapdash.
Yeah, my worry is that around my woodburning stuff, I've got bookcases and I've got a lot of old classics and things like that. My wife hates them. I just know that if there's never not enough kindling in my house, she's just going to start burning with Jane Austen's, mate. I'll be in trouble then.
Yeah.
When Thomas Hardy goes up the chimney, I'll have had it. But no, I always have to make sure it's well stocked up with kindling.
Ripping a few pages out to get the fire going. Yeah,
absolutely. Weren't any kindling. You didn't cut any kindling, so. Right? And any trollops gone up the chimney, bro.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, the other thing I've been doing, I posted a picture of it. I spent day before yesterday putting a stub wall into my garage finally after
it does look really good mate
years ago I wanted to do it and I've finally done it.
It does look really good, and we have literally spent the last hour talking about designing your workshop, which is probably the most one of the most I just love designing
workshop. I'm glad we didn't record it because I'm not sure if we'll hear it, but
well yes you can have your screwdrivers over here and your spanners over here.
But no, I genuinely really appreciate your help with that, because one of the things I'm not great at is that kind of design. I'm not particularly a visual kind of person in that way. So getting your eye on it is really helpful in terms of design.
I think it's one of my favourite things to do in the world, designing workshop spaces. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
Well, I might just get you around to do it in that case then.
Well, in all seriousness, mate, make you a nice bench. If you
I really love that.
If you want a nice bench, I'll make you one of those English woodworking benches and then we'll find you a vice to put on it.
I'd really love that because it would be nice to have a proper space to work out there.
Got a flat floor, mate.
Yep.
Having a flat floor is a key.
Yeah. Well, it's a garage. Their garage is probably, I think, approximately 16 feet long, whatever that is in metres. So, what's that, about 5 metres, 6 metres?
I'd say it's 8 by 8, that space.
That space is 8 foot by 8 foot.
Did you see that?
Yeah. So, I think it might be 9 by 8, but yeah, close enough. And that little workshop space. And then there's another space, the other side, which is about the same.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So one end was always going to be kind of storage, and it was. I was thinking it would be the end. We've decided now. I think probably it's going to be in the workshop space.
Being able to open your door,
yeah,
your garage door, then in the summer, it means you can just work on such bigger things. Yeah. And like we were discussing, if you need to bring a car in, even you can get the nose in, and if you want to bring a bike in, you can get a bike in and work it in your shop, and you can store all your sheet goods, and it's just. I just think having that opportunity to expand out, you know. I think it'd be much better and much easier for you to have it the other way around.
Yeah.
And if some of the beekeeping stuff's in there, it's much easier to load it, isn't it?
Well, so I want to get the beekeeping gear in there. Oh, dog's having a little bark up. Pause there a second. Yeah, so if we could get the beekeeping gear in my garage, or most of it in there.
We will.
I think that'd be.
It's not going to be a garage anymore, mate.
No, it's not. No,
it's going to be the second workshop.
It's going to need a new name.
Workshop of Wonder. Wow. just heading over to the wow.
Oh dear. I've got to get it organised, and I could do it getting a proper workbench in there, and then some more shelving and stuff.
I made mine out of scaffold boards, but we can make yours out of. Definitely make yours out of. Timber off cut at the milled out. You'll have like a more flashy one than I am, mate. You'll have like a solid oak top, all sorts going on, mate. It's going to be immense. So, but we'll definitely be able to get yours measured up to size. And I think that you'll find that having a space where you can just have all your tools organised and out, but then it will lead you to then want to make things as well.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I put the picture obviously of the stubble that I built up on the Facebook group the other day, and one of the things that was really obvious to me when I built it was that I don't cut straight. Even with the circular saw, I don't cut straight. So having a proper setup where I can cut more accurately will lead to a better quality of work.
Absolutely.
Which will make me feel like I've done a good job, which might lead to me to wanting to do it more. And it's certainly something that if you'd have said to me when I was in my 20s, oh, you're going to be doing this one day, I'd have been like, no, I don't think I'm just not made that way. But actually, I've really enjoyed it. And the quality of like the log store that I built and this sort of associated barn thing, I'm really pleased with it. It's not perfect, and I know it's imperfections because I built it.
Yeah, but if you look at how much it would be to buy a bespoke.
Or to buy something like that, you'd be looking at thousands, probably.
Crazy money.
Built, yeah.
Crazy money. And just being able to store things right and lay your hands on things when you need to. And you will find, as I did, well, you might not, but you just become more confident. And then if you want to kind of, even if you get an opportunity, you know, you find some nice bit of timber and you want to make a few breadboards and flog them or whatever, you've got a space to run that out of, rather than it, you have to take over and have a space in the house. And I know something that I've been certainly thinking about when I've been making those hurdles and the workbenches, and thinking a little bit about additional income as well. Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, I found out, you know, that you could earn, you're allowed to earn $1,000 a year.
That's it, yeah, I said that last time.
And, and so just trying to think about ways in which you can supplement your income in this day and age where you, you know, where every penny counts and we're all struggling.
You're allowed to earn £1,000 tax free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is like, that's £1,000.
It is.
Yeah.
That's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and so, one of the things I would be interested to hear from some of the people on the podcast Facebook page is, do any of them, you know, have supplementary incomes?
Mm.
Not selling the things they grow, perhaps, but maybe you've got a little run of 10 people who buy your eggs every week, or maybe you bake the odd loaf or something. Mm. But yeah, be really interested to hear if you've got a craft skill, or you do odd jobs or what have you.
Mm.
I think it would be quite nice to do that and find out some things, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be long before you're doing that, will it? We've got a guest here, haven't we?
We've got a guest. You need a plug?
Yeah.
What do you need a plug for?
I need it for my
charger.
Oh, okay. There you go, mate. You're off.
Excuse me a minute, mate.
That's all right. So, yeah, one of the things I would really like to hear would be whether there's anybody out there who'd be willing to share or talk about things that they've built or sold or done or ideas. I mean, the honey is kind of the first one for us, is that we make it for us, but we have surplus.
Yeah.
And we've very much always been thinking about that as a kind of, not retirement, but something there in the future that we'd like to expand.
I didn't tell you, did I?
Yeah, go on.
So, one of my, in fact, Neve, who's just here just now, my daughter, one of her friends, dad, is he's a distiller.
He's a lot where this is going already.
Right? So he's got right?
I bet he's got some friends.
Yeah. So he and there's four of them in the venture altogether, have got like a craft distillery where they make their own, obviously, mostly gin.
Yeah.
And now rum.
Right.
But they also make kind of what they call white label product, which is where a company will say, can you just make us a generic gin?
Right.
And then they take it away and they do whatever
base
they do.
Base product.
Right. Base product. So, I forget where that came from now.
Well, we're talking about honey.
Yeah, so he was asking me about honey for a gin. He wanted to do honey rum maybe.
Right.
And he was after some honey for it.
Okay.
So, we might be able
how
to
supply. How much does he want?
Well, my first thing was, I don't think I'm going to be able to produce as much as you need, like, right now.
Depends.
But it depends how much you need. So, that might be out. That might be the sideline. That might be it.
Could there be a reciprocal agreement? I can see this. Well, I can see no cash changing hands in this agreement.
I can see something that we've always wanted to do, which it turns out, is entirely legal to do.
Yeah.
In the right setup,
everything else becomes a pot owl if we start making moonshine.
I could make moonshine,
rumshine.
Yeah. So.
Okay, mate. Oh dear,
the conversation I had with him was around then, obviously, the honey, but also then, because we've always talked about distilling and wanting to do a bit of distilling just to be able to make some moonshine, just because wouldn't it be good fun just to do it once? Yeah. And we were always like, well, it's a bit dangerous and is it legal and all that. He's like, no, it's legal. The problem is that what you make, if it's for sale, is immediately that it's produced, you have to pay the duty on it.
Yeah, I'm not even bothered about selling it, are you?
No. So if you're making it for your own personal consumption, there's no
yee-haw.
There's no problem.
Take me up the hill.
All the problems we thought we might have, gone.
Oh, mate. I'm going to be like Appalachian cowboys, bro.
But like, literally, he says he has pallets of the product that he's made that he then, before it's even moved out of the workshop into their warehouse, which is literally next door, they have to pay the duty on it straight away.
Which is very high, isn't it?
Which is very high, and obviously they're hoping then to make it back by selling the product. But yeah, that was very interesting.
Let's just go at some point. I can see the next podcast there for that.
Well,
be very drunk.
The other thing I said was, really like to come and see it at some point, because that'd be really nice.
Where are they based then?
I think it's somewhere near Howsham.
Oh dear, what a shame.
Yeah.
That's not. Wow.
Yeah, so that was, yeah. Yeah, interesting.
You never know where a side hustle might take you.
Right, exactly. People you meet, it's mad, isn't it? It's mad. Have the right conversations with the right people. Opens doors all the time.
So, if mead is a spirit, is a wine made from honey.
Yeah.
What happens if you distill that? What does that become?
Don't know.
Because like obviously cider, you make Calvados, don't you?
Yeah.
And things like that, and brandy's made out of fermented wine.
Mm.
Obviously, vodka's made out of fermented. I don't know, potato beer.
Potatoes, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a base alcohol product which is then distilled, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So if mead with a base alcohol product,
which
you're
we
asking,
could make, then what could we make?
I don't know.
Honey spirit. Let's honey liquor.
Let's do it.
Well, that's the stuff. I knew that winter wheat had come in handy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're in business. Yeah, yeah.
There's no wheat for sale in the shop. No. It's all gone to make
liquor.
Sorry,
we drank
it's all gone to make liquor.
Oh dear. Wow. So speaking of fermenting anyway,
my stout wasn't great. I've used it for cooking. I've had a lot of venison stout. But it's been great for that.
Yeah.
But it kind of, you know, how was your beer?
I've only had one pint of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I've bought beer
because too yeasty.
I just didn't like it.
Right.
It wasn't the flavour profile of it wasn't as complex as stuff I can buy, which I enjoy drinking.
Which has led me back to where my beer making started, which is Wherry, which is made by a company called Woodfords. They've got their kit bang on. It always comes out great.
Yeah.
When I made mine, the chap who I work for, he made some Wherry and it's absolutely superb.
Mm.
And so for the extra £5, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Because you have 40 pints that you want to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next round of Wherry's gone in already. So I'm getting back to that. And I know that it's a much superior product. It was at the time, there weren't any available and stuff like that. So, you know, it's not something that I want to let go of. I want to get that right. I want to get the cycle right with my two barrels and my one fermenting bin so that I can just have this rolling product because it's something that we drink every week and we use it. So it's got to work. Got to get it
if
right.
If you're short of fermenting vessels,
yeah, I've had
I'm
a look
not.
At your garage. Hey, looks like... It looks like Harvey's around it.
It's like a Young's like homebrew shop, doesn't it? At the minute, it's mad amount of stuff.
So I will do it again because I do want to get it right, and I don't like buying beer, even though I buy quite cheap alcohol. Mm. You know, I don't buy a lot of expensive stuff, and I don't drink loads anyway. But the difference between something being adequate and pleasurable, it's got to be the right balance, hasn't it?
Well,
don't get me wrong, this stout you get drunk.
Yeah,
but. I want it to be getting drunk nicely.
Well, I typically drink maybe two or three of a weekend, like Friday, either Friday or Saturday night. I'll drink two or three, and that's it, right? And I want to enjoy those. I want to look forward to them and already enjoy them.
Absolutely.
And if it's okay, why am I bothering? You know, I'd much rather spend the fiver it is in the shop to get three of those.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and then that's it, isn't it? It's sorted. So, yeah, I agree. I think getting a better one, probably I might turn some of mine into vinegar and see if I can.
Yeah, so you're all right. Mm. You've got an out, haven't you? Yeah. And like I say, we used a good bit of ours for cooking the venison stews in, which have been absolutely superb. Mm. But I will want that barrel soon. So I'm going to go back to the Woodfords Wherry.
Talk about it.
And I would encourage people if they wanted to have a go. It's a very simple kit beer. You know, it's a total malt, but you don't need to put any extra sugar in it, just to prime the barrel. And I know that it's cheating a little bit because it's a malt extract in a tin.
Yeah.
But it's a great product.
It's cheating really a little bit, but you could buy that beer. You know, I think they're Cambridgeshire or Bedfordshire based. I've seen
Norfolk.
Oh, is it Norfolk? So I've seen their beers for sale in Cambridge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they obviously supply to certain parts of the country. Not down. I've never seen them down here.
No, it's a bit. I mean, they make four or five different strength beers.
Yeah.
It is always in homebrew circles. Had the reputation of a really good,
they
just got it right.
Yeah,
and it's always, I've never had a bad one.
Yeah,
but it's just that sometimes if it's not available, you think, oh, I'll buy this tin or whatever.
Yeah,
but it doesn't ever seem to come out. So, you know, I've learned a lesson through it that wait, get what you want, pay the bit extra as well.
Yeah,
and you think, you
but
know, you,
if you're
you,
getting 40 pints for 20.
Probably
quid.
delivered for £25 now.
Yeah. So £25 for 40 pints. I mean, you can't buy beer for that. Not beer that you want to drink anyway.
No, God.
So for the sake of getting the setup sorted out, which you probably, as I've found, will get for nothing. Because
you
there's people
definitely get that set up for nothing.
You know, you picked a set up for nothing last year. I was given a load of stuff over Christmas time for nothing.
Absolutely.
And it, all you really need is, what we're talking, one big fermenting bin.
Yeah.
And then something to, what we call, rack off into.
I have to say, I think the heat mat is quite essential, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to make your beer in the winter, if you're going to make it in the summer, it will be all right. But if you want to make beer when it's cool and the temperature drops in your house and your kitchen overnight, I think having that low heat, you know, that heat source just to keep it going is probably a really good idea.
Okay.
And I picked up one of those heat mats that you put under a seed tray. You know, I think it was about 8 or 9 quid, and I've got that. You can buy belts and stuff. I mean, yeah, if you were less scientific and your wood-burning stove was going, or your arga was going, you could put it in a warm spot in your kitchen. It would probably be okay. But just for me, I just know that I can sit it on that mat, and if I don't have a power cut, for those 7 or 8 days where it really needs it, it's pretty constant.
And, so what are we talking, 20 degrees?
I can't, I don't even know what it is.
No.
The one that I've got isn't specifically designed for beer.
No, no, I'm just thinking in terms of the temperature you want to keep it at.
I think that I think it's between a certain range, I'll have a look. I think it's something like between 17 and 21 or something. Mm. I know you have to do lagers at a different temperature.
Yeah.
But there's loads of little books out there and stuff like that. But this just helped in my house, which was all right in the day, but it got cold at night because obviously the wood burner goes out and, you know, it would have gone way below 18 degrees in my house, probably down to about 13, I'd say, downstairs. Yeah. So it was essential then for the fermentation not to get stuck.
Yeah.
Because if you've paid the money out, you do need it to work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But one thing that worked when I was making this stuff for the chap who I work for, he's got a water filter on his faucet in his kitchen.
Yeah.
So we were actually using filtered water.
Yeah.
But out of a tap, if it makes sense. Yeah. And I don't know whether it was that or not, but it certainly made a difference because obviously it's not got a lot of chemicals in there it. And I don't know whether that makes a big difference. And we did prime it with brewing sugar rather than normal sugar, which we just got from Wilko's as well. Mm. So all these things are available in Wilko's, which is probably the best source. It's just go on their site and check whether they've got availability before you go along.
Yeah.
You can check every product in the store. So,
really? Okay.
Yeah, you can see whether they've got it, and it will tell you in your local area where they have got it, if they haven't got it in one store. So you just ring them up and reserve it then if you want to get that specific product. So, I mean, I will get that right. There have been a few things that I wanted to get right. I wanted to get the bread right, which is ticking along. I haven't started my sourdough yet. A bit nervous about that, but we'll talk about that in a minute. My cakes I'm making now. I've got a good, really good plain tray-baked lemon sponge.
Yeah.
And a really good, that sultana loaf that I make every week. They're ticking over. I've not got my biscuits right yet.
Okay. Mm. What are you after from your biscuits?
Well, I wanted a biscuit recipe which I could make every week, and I will probably go with something oaty because then I can eat it with cheese or eat it with a cup of coffee. So I'll find something. And I've got lots of recipes, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's just not part of my sort of weekly rota. So the no-knead bread, I've got that down now. Mm. I have actually been looking to experiment with that a little bit because I've seen people making it in a Dutch oven, which I might try. I might try that. But probably the biggest sort of improvement I've made two absolute bangers over the last two bakes. Having the good new oven has helped, obviously.
Yeah.
But for the two that I've made, I've put a bowl of water in the oven.
Okay.
I've never done it before. Right, never done it before, so just a cereal bowl, boil the kettle, half fill it, put it in the bottom of the oven, and that has made a massive difference to the loaves, or I don't know, but
I've heard about
that it does, but I've always been a bit like, but it did make a really big difference by creating perhaps a more moist atmosphere, is that what it is?
It's the humidity, so you get the extra humidity in there, which obviously gives a different finish on the outside of the loaf, doesn't it? Which is what the Dutch oven is supposed to replicate.
Yeah. They did seem to rise better as well and have a better proof, but both of those take quite a long time.
Yeah.
But I've been looking at another recipe. I might post a link to it. Probably the original no-knead recipe, where you make it and it sits overnight. And that's a really long proof.
Well, I've heard of the no-knead being done a week in advance.
Wow.
So you literally use the crisper drawer. I'm sure I've talked about this before. You use the crisper drawer of the fridge.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, it's a big old space to give up. But if you've got enough fridge space, you go up the Christmas drawer, you make up a might massive
clean
batch.
Might have to clean mine out a bit, brother.
It wants to be clean, so yeah.
Needs to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got some grind experiments going on down there.
But then what you do is you make up a big batch and then you leave it in the fridge for the week and you just take off a bit each day and cook that bit, that one little loaf.
Okay.
To shape it and then...
And I'm never going to cook every day.
No.
So I was looking at this one where you make it and then you leave it overnight.
Yeah.
And it must almost overprove. I don't know. Because that's a lot to be going on, isn't it?
It depends, because I've been going back to the sourdough more recently, doing it overnight. Right. So I'm looking at now probably 36 hours from mix to bake. Okay. Part of that is that because I've not been using my sourdough starter as much, it's not quite as vigorous. And the house is not as warm, so it's not quite as vigorous. And I'm also salting it earlier in the recipe, so it's not quite as vigorous. Yeah. So I'm getting a really long, slow ferment in the original sort of sponge.
And I think that I just need to get that timetable sorted, like you say. Yeah. I read through that one you posted, that sourdough recipe you posted.
Yeah.
And I quite liked that.
Yeah.
I think I might be able to work with that scheme. And that will come online. I definitely want to get that sourdough right. But I want to do it really well. Has that got
30 minute stretch and folds and stuff like that in it still?
It said they're optional.
Yeah, so I don't do that anymore. So I've now, it comes back to sourdough remains an art form. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no science and there's as many recipes as there are sourdough bakers. In fact, probably there's a few more recipes than there are bakers. And so for me... If I'm going to do it and I'm getting a good rise, like in the summertime when I was doing it regularly in the summertime, I would be then looking to do the ferment and then I would literally do a few stretch and folds. I would then shape the loaf and it's all about getting the tension, surface tension in the loaf, because then it'll hold its shape in the oven. Mm. There's lots of different ways of doing it and stretching and folding is only one of them.
Mm.
So I've got a different technique now, which is very much more traditional, conventional baking technique of kind of stretching it by dragging it towards you and rolling. You know, you've seen people do that where they roll the underneath of the under by using the surface tension on the worktop and the friction of the worktop, and you pull it towards you and it kind of tucks under, and eventually if you do that enough times, what you'll end up with is a ball of dough which doesn't actually have any clear join where you started out from, and from that you can then just put that straight in the basket and it's done and let it then rise and then
I think I'd probably like to learn that.
And that's a lot, because when I was doing the 30 minute stretch and folds, that is the discipline that's required. I just don't have the discipline.
I won't be doing that.
I don't have the time. And so
I can't even make regular bread, mate, because I don't want to give up 10 minutes of kneading. And that's
why
the
machine with a dough.
I don't want a machine, do I? That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the quality of the last couple of bakes of that no knead has been so good, it's almost like, I don't need the sourdough.
So what are you getting, crustier? Or
beautiful spongier loaf with a really good crisp crumb on the outside.
Yeah.
And my son, who doesn't normally like it, loved it.
Yeah.
Which he normally doesn't.
Yeah.
And everybody has liked it. And I've run out of the flour that you get me.
All right.
And those two bakes have come out of the really cheap flour.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I've been proving it by my wood burner.
Yeah.
I've been making sure the bowl's warm.
Yeah.
But nothing major, not rocket science.
No.
But it's just a great no-knead recipe.
Yeah.
And it's the most simplest recipe I know, which is literally 900 grams of flour.
Yeah.
650 mil of tepid water.
Mm.
I think I do 3.5 teaspoons of yeast.
Mm.
Pinch of salt.
Mm.
That's it.
So that's quite a high moisture content as well, and quite high hydration in that relative to conventional loaf.
Because it's supposed to be quick, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
so do you find that holds its shape?
Yeah.
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 Do you put it in a tin, or what's your setup?
So you make it in a bowl, obviously, and when you make it first, it doesn't look wet enough.
Yeah.
It looks like really shaggy, rough kind of, because you don't need it at all.
No.
You just incorporate the mixture together.
Well, you wouldn't need that very easily because it would stick to you.
Yeah.
It'd be too wet.
I use a knife.
Right.
You can't even use a spoon. You know, I use a knife and then might bring it together in my hands, but I don't get messy.
Yeah.
And it's all done in a bowl.
Yeah.
So it's not on the top at all.
Yeah.
And then by the time it's done its first prove, it's the opposite.
Right.
You pour it in. It's so wet. And so what I do then is I I have to use a spatula to get it out of the bowl, split it into three, and I will have to use some flour in order to be able to work it into a loaf shape.
Right.
So I split that. That mixture makes three. They're not the really deep tins. What are they? Pound? I don't know what the measurements are.
If it's three, and you're...
So it's a loaf tin like this.
Yeah.
Size of a house brick.
Yeah.
That's not a big one, though, is it? Because you can buy a big £2 loaf tin. Yeah, is that right? So I think they're pound loaf tins. Right. Maybe. So that will make three of those.
Yeah.
And then when you put that in, it will be maybe 2/3 of the way up the sides.
Yeah.
And then, but it you almost pour it in. It's not a really kind of like soft dough, floury dough. Yeah. It's quite liquidy.
Yeah.
And then the second proof, they will dome right over, but they're obviously very airy.
Yeah.
And so you have to be careful when you put them in the oven.
Okay, because you just knocking it would cause it
I
to
I would
collapse.
Say that if you bashed it about, you'd lose quite a lot of the air out of it, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how I what I okay. do. But that's using the cheapest flour off Amazon.
Yeah.
Bread flour.
So the reason I ask is if I was baking a conventional loaf with that level of hydration, it wouldn't hold its shape on the baking sheets I normally use.
Yeah, but you don't bake in tins like I do.
No, I don't. I bake on sheets, yeah.
But I would like to try that loaf recipe in a Dutch oven, oiled.
Yeah.
I've heard that makes a really good loaf.
Well, that's what I have been using for my... So
I've got a really good.
Recently.
I've got a really good cast iron Le Creuset round loaf. Well, it's not a loaf; it's like a casserole, but I mean, it's a big old girl.
The problem you'll have is that you'd have to oil it and then make one big loaf in that.
Yeah, so it holds
Dutch
space.
Oven because it won't hold its shape. It'll collapse.
Don't worry about the eating, there, mate.
No, I'm not worried about that. But you won't be able to. You won't be able to like make sandwiches out of it or toast out of it because it'll be like a pancake because it'll.
Yeah.
With that level of moisture, it will collapse. It won't hold its...
You don't think it would be a big loaf?
I don't...
Well, you know what I'm going to do. We'll try it.
Of course. I think...
I make a mean sandwich, bro, because a slice would be bad. Look.
What I think you'll make is a flying saucer.
Right, okay.
That's what I would expect him... what I would expect you to make. Because you've not got the structure that working the gluten would give you. You've not got the structure that having slightly less hydration would give you. So
I think the recipe calls for 600 mil. And I know that when I use the flour from Shipton Mill, I don't have to put as much water in.
It's probably got
higher protein content.
Yeah.
And the stuff that I'm getting from Amazon is a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
It's maybe a quarter off, you know, it's 25% less.
Yeah.
And originally I wondered whether it would make such good bread, but it does if you treat it slightly differently. Mm. So a little bit more moisture. And maybe that extra half a teaspoon of yeast, but it still works out. So
yeah, I mean,
one of them doesn't even get out. Well, one is eaten before it comes out of the oven, right? And then one is probably gone by that day, and then the other one lasts for 3 days.
But no, it'd be interesting. I've got a couple of good recipes that I really like now, and the conventional white loaf that I make is similar. Although I make a kilo batch into one big plat. So what I'll do is actually plait it, which looks really nice, and that will last us a few days.
If you didn't have a Doak, would you make that bread?
If I didn't have a Doak, I'd make exclusively sourdough probably.
I think I think that if I had a Doak, I would make more conventional bread. But I really like the no need recipe because I make it on a Sunday, and I make it in the morning, and then I don't do anything else. And then I bake it after the roast, right?
Yeah.
And it's just so... It fits in on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And it fits into the routine.
No, if that works, then it works.
Yeah. And those three loaves will nearly get us through.
Mm.
And then if I make a soda bread or another batch, then... But what I find is that... Yeah, you know, the excitement of it coming out of the oven. But then we don't eat as much of it during the week. And you certainly don't need as much of it.
But the other thing as well is that homemade bread is best eaten in the first 24 hours, isn't it? After that, the quality drops off pretty rapidly.
I have to say, it's great frozen, that bread.
And
if I wrap it, once it's really cool, if I wrap it in plastic, it lasts for three or four days, no problem. Mm. And it never seems to, as it starts to soften, that crumb, because it's in plastic, I suppose, it's still actually fine for sandwiches and things like that. It makes great toast as well, croutons and...
Yeah.
It never ever goes off.
No.
Never goes off, bro. And yeah, it's just a real luxury. It's a real luxury. I was talking about luxuries with someone. We were discussing coffee the other day, and about how you would think, wouldn't you, in this time of thrift and this time that coffee shops would be really struggling and things like, because there's a lot of money to go and buy coffee, but they're not. It's the other, they're going the other way, because it's a luxury that people can still justify and afford.
Yeah,
but it's a real luxury. Not that I can. It's a shame in it, but you know, I've got my setup at home now, which is working perfectly. Yeah. I don't think I've ever talked about my moka pot. Got to talk about my moka pot at some point, mate. And the bread is the same. It's a luxury that you have every day, but you really appreciate it because it's a really lovely quality product.
Well,
it, you
just know? Like a bit of bread, and yeah,
can't beat it, can you? Absolutely marvelous. So
I'll bake a loaf now tomorrow. You know, don't you?
Well, you've got the urge.
You know, yeah, I'm gonna have to.
Well,
I'm
going to see my daughter on Saturday, and I know I'll have to bring some. So tomorrow I'll be baking as well, but I'll have to make my dough before I go.
Yeah,
and then ask my I'll ask my wife to do the next bit.
Yeah,
if she just would knock it back and put it in a tin, and then I'll bake it when I get home. So, but that's the thing about the no need is that I can afford to give up a minute in the morning.
Yeah.
Because that is literally. And that,
but then the sourdough is the same. It's like literally in the machine.
Yeah.
And because it's all just chuck all the ingredients in and then turn the dough hook on. That's it, it's done. And then I'll just put a plate on the top and leave it.
But the other one I have been doing, mate, is the flatbreads. I've made about 4 or 5 batches of those recently.
Okay.
And I'm not very good if I have to get a recipe out.
So what, when you say flatbreads, there's lots of different types of flatbreads.
So
what would
all-purpose
they be most,
flour.
What would they most look like when they're done?
I would say that they most look like...
Yeah, something we might buy.
Probably like a naan.
Okay.
Maybe in between a chapati and a naan.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So they're just made of yogurt and flour. That's it. And I expect you could probably make them with water and flour. But I think they'd be a slightly more like a tortilla.
Yeah.
But the yogurt, I think the yogurt works because it's working against the rising agents in the self-raising flour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the alkaline and thing, like exactly the same as soda bread.
You've got the acid, haven't you, from the yogurt, and then you've got the bicarb in the self-raising.
But what I wasn't very good, I like how many spoons rather than weigh it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've been working that out, trying to work that out.
Mm.
And that has been a really great recipe, I have to say. Mm. To make that, when I wasn't feeling very well, I was at home and I made some vegetable soup, which is what I always fancy when I'm ill. And then we had them, and you know, just to be able to make that 100 grams of flour and 4 spoons. And then I was like, right, well, how many grams is 20? Well, how many tablespoons is 25 grams?
Mm.
And what would you say?
25 grams of flour?
Yeah.
Tablespoons?
Yeah, like heaps as well,
probably
not like
one,
level. No, it's a bit more than
is
that.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah, it's a bit more than that. It's about 2 and a bit.
Right, is it?
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah, it's just about. So now I know without having to get anything out.
Yeah.
I just get a spoon out.
So what you need then is a flour scoop.
Yeah, I do.
I've got a flour scoop, and that's about 250 gram scoop.
Right, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And it's only a 20 foot. Right, that's a lot.
Well, when I'm making a loaf of bread.
Oh, right, I'm not as good at it. I always weigh it out.
I still weigh it, but if I always sort of think, you know, in a pinch, let's say there's no more batteries for my little scale.
My scale doesn't got batteries in it, bro. I'm a step above weights on each side.
The weights on each side are more accurate.
They probably
are very much more. I've taken to weighing the water.
Yeah.
Because the jugs are not that accurate.
No.
So I weigh water in dry bread recipes now as well, which is, particularly when you're making sourdoughs, quite helpful.
Yeah. I want to do the sourdough, but I want it to be.
Well, it was really nice to see, going back to the Facebook group, it's been really lovely to see new people coming into the group, firstly, but also lots of people posting about what they've been doing.
Yeah.
Which you always say, you know, it just makes my day when I see someone else has put something in there. Especially then when other people have got in there and commented.
Absolutely.
That's just brilliant, sort of building that community. And there was a really nice little thread. I think Sean again started that on sourdough starters.
Right, yeah.
And I know my mum's got in on the action.
Mate,
she's in there and she's having a go. And it's just really lovely to see people having a go. And they're asking for advice on sourdough. And I've never made a sourdough starter.
What?
I've never made one.
Where did you get yours from then?
Someone gave me some.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Yeah. Well, so, I'll definitely.
So I know the principle behind it, but yeah. I've never made one because I've never needed to. I was given a starter.
I'll be just keep it going. So are you going to make your own or are you going to keep your own?
No, I like the one I've got. It's great. Yeah. It works really well. It'll be local because I know the fella who made it.
Right, that's fair.
He would have made it himself. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to try and make mine myself. We'll see how we go. Again, it's something that I want to give full consideration to, and I know perhaps I should do it sooner rather than later because going back to what we started on, it's going to go nuts, bro.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we talked about additional income.
Yep.
And breads and cakes and things like that.
I've got everything ticking over here as it normally is.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to talk about was that I'm just thinking about incubating eggs.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit early, I know, but just making sure I've got everything made.
See, now you've started it, haven't you?
What?
You started that thing now. You said that thing. So now it's going to sit in my head until I do that now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's just making sure I've got my incubator's all running and I've got my little heat lamp and my mama hen and the space to put them in. We want some quail at the farm.
Yep.
So we'll probably do some quail.
Mm-hmm.
We're quite keen on having some geese at the farm.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit worried about doing those because at the moment, as many people in the UK will know, is that you can't have any birds outside at the moment. And so... Yep. So then am I going to, you know, would I be better to wait and see if those restrictions get lifted? Whereas with the quail, they're going to be indoors anyway. So
I'm going to suggest to you that this is going to be a problem for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Even if it is lifted, this time next year, we'll be back in it again.
Yeah, yeah. So might just stick to the quail and see how we go. And we had spoken at the farm. We've got our laying flock now.
Yeah.
And we know what they are. They're obviously laying hybrids, different ones. But we had spoke about doing a really premium quality meat bird.
Mm.
And so I think we'll go for something local.
Yep.
So, you know, even though the Light Sussex, we're both from Sussex, the Light Sussex is a really good breed of dual purpose hen. I think I might try the Dorking because it's West Sussex.
I was going to say, it's only an hour or so up the road.
It's only an hour up the road. And that's got a top minute of Roman times. That breed's been around so long.
I think you should do both and then we'll do a side-by-side
tasting. I definitely
tasting.
Don't want to do a Light Sussex for eating. I think if I was going to do another breed for eating, I would do an Old English Game.
Okay.
You know, or something. Well, Orpington's not that far, is it? That's Kent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look at some of those. And we would like to have sort of like a pedigree flock at the farm as well, which is, we let them get on with it a bit. We have one cockerel, a range of hens, and then maybe we try and rear a few naturally like that and let them do it, but very much for meat production. But, you know, maybe just for Christmas or, you know, one or two meals, you know, a year.
Yeah.
You know, not anything.
I'd love for you to do me a turkey for next Christmas.
Yeah, I think that will happen as well. I think we'll definitely try and do some turkeys for people, you know, because that's something I'd like to do. I've never done it.
No.
So I know that we were keen on trying that. And I did have a turkey that was reared on a farm, the chap who does the meat, and it was absolutely superb. Yeah. And the thing I don't like about turkeys is when they get too big.
Yep.
And it was beautiful. It was a really good sized turkey. We ate it at the end of January. It was delicious, and he reared those this year. And if I could do that and make enough for a few people, because if you want loads of meat, just have two.
It
doesn't need to be this, you know, this huge monster that doesn't fit in the oven.
They can't actually breed naturally anymore, can they, turkeys? The commercial turkeys that you buy have to be artificially inseminated. Yes. Yeah, but they're not artificially inseminated. They're IV kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it's just mad, isn't it?
Hopefully, we're not going to get that to that level. We'll be lovely to be able to do it. So,
I've got that and the same with the Cornish cross they use for the chickens, isn't it? For the intensive breeding, it's just
it's madness, isn't it? So, I definitely thinking that will be my next thing will be to get all of that lined up and then start trying to get some fertile eggs.
Yeah,
the quail I will use my own eggs from home.
Yeah,
because they're just starting to lay. If we're going to do some turkeys and stuff, I've never done that, so I don't know whether you buy day olds or whether I presume you buy day olds.
I would think so.
Yeah, and I don't actually even know whether you can eat the male and the female. I don't know.
Oh,
do you have the cockbirds? Do you have the hens? Or I don't know. No, nothing about.
Imagine turkeys. They both taste the same.
I would say you probably don't. I don't know.
No.
I don't know, but. So I'm going to look into that and, yeah, have a few people who would like a turkey for next year. That'd be great. But I'm excited to be doing the incubating because we didn't do that last year. And we've kind of got the meat, got the egg birds, like I say, but to have a little bespoke flock of really good quality premium eaters and then some quails for a different range of eggs through the farm. I think that'd be a really nice thing.
I know our girls really are much more attached to the ones that we hatched here than any of the other birds that we've ever had. You know, they've got this thing about the birds that we hatched here, especially the first one we hatched here, who's still going at the minute.
Wow.
So that's a few years ago. She still lays as well quite regularly.
Well, there you go, mate. So that's where I'm at. That's where we're at, really.
I've got one other thing, which is to say that I have fallen into the trap.
Oh, dear. What's that, mate?
Well, you know the thing I have about the notion of a resolution.
Oh, really?
I've blown it already.
How can you blow a resolution? You're only in
February. Well, I haven't even got resolutions, did I? Because I don't like them because of the fact that you can blow them so quick, right? So, you know, I said I'm going to take it a bit easier this year and allow myself to take it a bit easier.
Yeah.
No. So I got an email from the Allotment Society who went, well, your name's come to the top of the list. There's another half plot for you here if you want it still. And I went, do I want it still? I was going to give myself a break this year. I was going to take it easy.
Nah,
I don't really want it.
You're not.
I emailed about it and said, yes, please.
Well done, mate.
So I've been and had a look at that and it's pretty much the same size as the one I've got. It's a little bit down the hill from where I am with the other plot. They did offer me to try and move the two together, but I was just like, I've spent so much time and work on the one that I've got now, not keen to move, and it's not far enough away for it to be a problem, I don't think.
No.
So for the time being, I'm just going to take the two plots that are in different parts of the allotment, same time. There's no shed on it, but I've got a shed on the other one, so that's not a problem.
Yeah.
So it's just a bit of extra growing space that's, I don't know, 20, 30 Get yards downhill.
Get the buds on it.
Well, that's what I've got to figure out. It's already got a few little fruit bushes on it, and some raspberries. Little strawberry patch, there's some rhubarb, maybe a gooseberry or something like that on there. Blackcurrant perhaps. So that might be the fruit patch.
Solid.
The apple tree I've got here at home, last year, I moved it here from the allotment because I was struggling at the allotment in the site that it was in. I think it was a bit exposed up there with the salt air and that.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, whereas this is now a bit further down the hill, it's a bit more protected. And I'm wondering, because this year all the apples that I had on it were stolen by the squirrels before they matured.
Oh, really?
Every single one.
Speaking of apple trees, by the way, Tesco's are doing them at the moment.
Are they?
I believe they're 2 for £14.
I need to get over there then.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it just apple trees? Or have they got other fruit?
I think they do have a fruit as well. Yeah. So they had them in my Tesco's in Epping when I went up to see mum and dad. Yeah. And they also, so I would imagine Aylsham will have them.
Yeah.
And they have them behind the checkouts normally.
Yeah.
You know. So there's them, but the Trading For You in Heathfield, where we work, they're doing fruit trees in there as well, and they're £8 each. So, and they're standard. They're great trees.
Well, I could just do with I was just thinking if I move the apple tree up there, if I had maybe a plum, maybe a cherry.
Yeah, I mean the only thing about them is I can't tell you what rootstock they're on.
No,
but you could always espalier them.
Well, to be honest, it wouldn't matter where they are because they're going to be at the bottom. They're literally at the bottom of the hill on the boundary of the allotment.
That's fine.
So they can just, I'll just put a big old tree there and it won't matter too much. But like you say, I can always train it. But
yeah, absolutely.
Something that might be where it goes. So I might move my strawberry patch down there. Might move my gooseberry bushes down there in time.
Sounds ideal. See,
but it won't be this year because it's going to be too late by the time I do it now.
Nah.
By the time I get around to it, it will be.
Well, get yourself up Tesco's tonight. 24 hour. Have Nimba tomorrow. What you on about?
Yeah, I could do it if I wasn't trying to get my ducks in a row, mate. Don't need to be adding more jobs to the list. No, I've got a long old list already.
But I think that you could do a lot worse than put the whole lot over to potatoes, parsnips, onions.
Well, yeah.
Things which, once they're, maybe not parsnips, but spuds once they're in, you earth them up. But honestly,
I just need to look where the water is from there because the other plot
wouldn't
really
even bother.
No, really not. Plus, at least at the bottom of the hill, wasn't it? It might all run down to it anyway.
I didn't water my potatoes once this year, mate.
No?
And it was the hottest year on record.
Yeah.
Just get Desiree.
Okay.
Because they're really drought tolerant.
All right.
Honestly, I didn't water my potatoes once. And people, they can't. You can't water a field of potatoes.
No.
I mean, well, you probably can, but...
I've seen the old guns out there.
Yeah, but no, I never watered mine once, and they were great. Mm. Absolutely great. So I would, if it was me, you know that I like a good standard crop, but... Mm. I'd be looking at growing things which you could put in. I had this conversation with a friend today as well, who's got an allotment but not a lot of time at the moment. I put the things in that you know will give you a crop return, but you don't want to do anything to, right? So I would put in potatoes, earlies, and a main crop like Sarpo.
Yeah.
Right? Which has got blight resistant, or Desiree, which is drought resistant. I would put in dwarf or lotta, because nothing's growing up then when they're in.
No.
And you put them all in one day, and you get them all out on another day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I put them in, and I'd probably put pumpkins and squashes in another bed, because once they grow ground cover, there is absolutely nothing growing up in between them whatsoever. And that's what I would do.
That's not a bad shout.
Yes, and all of those things, you could go and get them all out in one day.
Yeah, yeah.
So for the sake of 2 days' work, it
does need to be something like that, because I don't want to take on a load of extra work. And it's actually in reasonable nick, which is a plus side.
Yeah. I would do that. You could quite easily grow some corn on it.
That crossed my mind, to grow just a massive block of corn, because we didn't have enough this year. We could have eaten way more than our crew.
I know, I don't mean sweet corn.
Oh, like,
I mean wheat.
Okay.
Yeah. I would be tempted to sow it and see what happens, because I think it would be really exciting. And everyone be on the allotment would be like, what on earth are you doing? Oh, mate, imagine on your allotment is just a block of wheat with a scarecrow in it.
Like a mini farm.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. I'll tell you what, you get quite a bit off it.
Yeah.
I can give you some spelt. I've got plenty of that.
Sunflowers.
You could grow all sunflowers. All sunflowers.
Make oil.
As an experiment.
Yeah.
What's worst going to happen?
Well,
I'll tell you what the worst going to happen is, mate. You're going to get every pheasant in Seaford come to that plot, and then you just eat them.
There ain't too many pheasants around there.
I bet there are.
Probably.
But there would be if there was a stand.
There would be, yeah.
There was a whole stand.
In the middle of town, but yeah.
You'd be surprised. So, yeah, I would definitely think about just doing some of those really basic crops, and ones that you don't need to weed, and they probably don't need to be watered. Mm. I mean, the bolotta even. I didn't water my bolotta last year. Maybe twice. I didn't have to. I couldn't.
The other thing I thought about is, because we've got, there's a couple of things that we've done this year that I could have, our family could have eaten a lot more of. One of those was strawberry sorbet. I was bringing all the strawberries in when they were all ripe for about 3 weeks. I didn't have enough time to process them all. And so I literally got to pureeing them with a bit of sugar and then putting them in the freezer and calling it sorbet. And some of it went through the ice cream machine and some of it didn't. But we literally, I could have a tub of that a week.
Yeah, lovely.
If I had 52 tubs of that in the freezer,
smashed it, yeah.
That would be a really good use of that spot, space.
Yeah, you could go over to strawberries there. But then there's nothing to stop you putting one of the beds down or putting Ypex over the floor now.
Yeah.
And then planting through that. So.
Well, I'll be more likely to go the no dig and put the cardboard down and then buy in some good soil to go over top for this year.
And then strawberry plants, or take runners off your own, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take runners off my own probably. Then they'll need moving anyway in a couple of years. So if I move them over next winter down there, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, something to think about. I've not even really had a chance to get up there properly yet. I've kind of been leaving it purposefully to try and get the other bits done first and then go up there once everything else is in order.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. I'm really excited about it, I have to say. But I just don't want to give too much time over to it, because I could see myself up there all the time.
Just do some of those bog standards, mate. You won't regret it.
Well, I think for this year, you know, the spuds, the squash particularly, I can see that working really well. And then we'll just see how we go.
Honestly, though, I reckon dwarf bolotta would work.
Yeah.
Because what do you need to do to them? They're really drought resistant, aren't they, bolotta bean? And then you don't even have to put any canes up.
No.
Maybe 4 pegs with string round the top so that they don't sort of bow outwards.
Yeah.
But they'll hold each other up.
Yeah.
You'll get millions of beans as well, won't you?
Yeah.
Thousands of them.
Yeah.
And then you just go along one dry day, shell them all out.
Yeah.
Oh dear, leave all the roots in there to fix all the notch. I mean, it's win-win, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not a bad shout. It's not a bad shout.
Right, we better go.
Yeah, okay, mate.
Got to drive home now, mate.
I know, that's the only problem.
Over the mist. We've seen it out there. It looks like Ander Baskerville's out there, doesn't it? Ooh, yeah. Over South Downs.
American Werewolf. Get home safe, aren't you?
Course I will, mate.
Yeah, I hope you're properly tooled up, ready for your journey, you know, just in case something goes wrong. For your EDCC.
Mate, I had a puncture on my way home the other day up from London. Save the bacon. Tell you what, don't knock having an EDCC.
No, having the gear. Makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Anyway,
thank you very much, everyone, for listening. So sorry it's taken us a little while to get this one back out again and get back on this, but hopefully we'll get back into a more regular rhythm going forward.
Yeah, try and get one out.
That's the plan, anyway. Thank you very much, obviously, for those of you particularly who are in the Facebook group and posting in there. That's really, really nice for us to see that. And please, if you're out there and thinking you know, you're just lurking around in the background and you're not brave enough to come forward and share what you're doing, please do that. We love seeing it. We love seeing everyone commenting on helping each other out with their ideas and new people coming in and asking for advice and that sort of thing. And certainly we can perhaps look at some point later on this year to do like little questions, which we did once before, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, like where are all the Twitter bills at?
Yeah,
that's definitely one I need answering.
Yeah. No, get people to ask us questions, mate. That was the kind
it
of
it would be an amazing
which
thing,
we've done once before, and that was really nice.
If there's people who want us to try and talk about something on a particular episode, but I still want people to know, I still don't consider myself an expert in any of these things, and it's lovely. It's lovely, isn't it, that we can bring people together who know a lot more than us.
Well, mate, what I know is that sometimes I talk utter nonsense, right? Because I remember, and I've not mentioned this before, I must do it quickly before we go. I remember talking about Christmas lights and saying about how, you know, maybe this year I might put one less on, or perhaps not put them on for quite so long, just to save a few quid because electric was getting expensive. And then I went in my local garden centre and it cost 50p to run a Christmas light for the whole of the Christmas period.
Oh, really?
If you left it on the whole time. So I took out.
Yeah.
So if I were you, I wouldn't bother listening to me if you're listening.
Yeah. Me and Alan both actually work in an office.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both chartered accountants. Anyway, have you seen my bowl hat, old boy? And my briefcase. I've got to catch the 7:52 back up to Elsport.
You are up way too past your bedtime if you're catching the train to the city in the morning.
Oh, you know me, old boy. Right, anyway, toodle-pip. Yeah,
thanks very much for listening. We'll speak to you soon. Cheers, bye-bye. So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK podcast Facebook group. Come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places, and please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.